It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, I'm telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility.
You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Fry Gun.
The Medium Fundamental.
Welcome to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan here in the great states of New Hampshire, getting set for the trip down to Florida for Red Sox spring training. We'll be there Wednesday through Friday with the Red Sox. Also, Bob Tewksbury will join us on the program to talk about his new book. Also, Neil Huntington from Amherst, New Hampshire, the GM of the Pittsburgh Pirates, members of the Red Sox hierarchy, players as well, as it's our annual spring training trip. Matt Bonner joins us right now on the program from Texas. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. Appreciate joining us for the program. I will state that nothing that happens at spring training really matters, but I really do appreciate the sponsors sending me down to Florida to be a witness to that. Which I think is it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be down there. It's gonna be hotter.
Fort Myers.
It's gonna be hotter down there than it's here. I'm not sure why that required a New Hampshire or Boston accent, but that's where I'm gonna be. I caught up the middle segment of the program. Jason Tatum joins us from the Celtics. Al Horford as well. Frank Kaminsky also, as we talk about his evolution in the NBA. Do some Bruins as well. They've been playing great hockey, and we'll hear from a number of their players coming up in a little segment of the program as well. We'll start, though, with the Celtics and the Rockets. And I have mentioned many times before here on the program, Matt, that I am not a big believer in the Houston Rockets. And I am still not a big believer in the Houston Rockets. Now, you have been on the Rockets bandwagon, perhaps not both feet, but you've been, one foot's been on and one foot's kind of been on the ground and sort of on the bandwagon for a number of years now. And the Rockets have gotten to the point now where they have the best record in the NBA. They have won 15 straight games, and they are ahead of the Golden State Warriors right now. So, in your view, is this the Rockets' time, or when they get to the postseason and they have to play, you know, the Spurs in the semifinals, the Warriors in the finals, they're going to come back to earth? Because to me, I do not in any way see them beating the Golden State Warriors.
I think it's going to come down to if they choose to defend or not.
Exactly.
Because it gets tricky in a seven-game series. It's a different dynamic than regular season. Teams are going to have more than one day to prepare for them. Obviously, they're incredibly talented on offense. They score a ton of points, shoot a lot of threes. But I think over a seven-game series, you have way more preparation. You learn more about guarding them. And you can do more to take away their offensive prowess than just a regular season game.
Yeah, and that's why I think that until I see them beat, you know, the Spurs, which, you know, given the personnel and given how the Spurs have hit the wall a little bit here, okay, I'd probably pick the Rockets in that series, but I'm not going to pick them convincingly. But, you know, I think D'Antoni has not proven it in the postseason, and I think that team has not proven it in the postseason, that they are going to step up and defend. The Golden State Warriors are the team that they are, not just because they can shoot it lights out and they can match the Rockets offensively, in my view, but because when they want to defend, they are a great, great defensive team.
They are, and they buy in. They play a lineup where 1 through 5 can switch, which is really difficult for teams to get open shots and open looks. And you know, back to the Houston Rockets, though, I think they scare the crap out of every other team in the league, having to try to figure out how to guard them. But you know, we saw it last year when the Spurs played them in the playoffs and ended up winning in Game 6 on their floor, shorthanded. I think Kawhi didn't play that game.
You're right.
And they figured them out.
Right.
And Houston couldn't score. I mean, at that point in the series, they figured out this is how you stop Houston. They had their number and ended up winning handily, shorthanded on their home floor. And that's what needs to be eliminated as a possibility for me to be a true believer of the Houston Rockets, if that makes sense.
Granted, they are better. I mean, they are better this year than they were last year, personnel-wise. I mean, Chris Paul's there now. It's a better team than they were last year. But I think what you're saying in principle is 100% correct, where the playoffs are a game of adjustments. And if Mike D'Antoni's going up against Coach Pop, if he's going up against Steve Kerr, and if he's going up against Brad Stevens, I'm taking those guys each time over D'Antoni. You know, D'Antoni seems like a nice guy and whatever, but he's, you know, I've watched him and his teams play a lot now with the Suns, with the Knicks, and with the Rockets, and the way they play is counter to everything I have ever seen in regards to how basketball, winning basketball is played. And they don't adapt to the postseason. And at times, you know, he does have more talent than the opposing team, and they don't necessarily react. I mean, that team is stacked with talent. There is no question about that. They have a versatile core, and they have a versatile bench that can mix and match. And they're really good. They're really deep. But, you know, I still need to be proven.
Yeah, they're tougher. They're tougher this year. They have Chris Paul and PJ Tucker, two veteran guys who are hard-nosed players. I think it gives their team character in playoff basketball, which is more physical. It gives them leadership down the stretch and game management-wise. Houston has always been a team of runs. They can go for them or against them. I think Chris Paul in the lineup adds some more stability. Less standard deviation, if you will. I'm going to take a statistics term. So, to me, you're right. They are a much better team than last year. But, you know, they got to prove it in the playoffs, for sure.
Agreed. And, you know, for the Celtics, they've played really well coming out of the All-Star break. They've been scoring at a high rate, playing with more pace. Defensively, they've been much better as well. And to me, you know, the Celtics lose that game in Houston, but I don't come away from that game feeling, you know, anything different about who the Celtics are and how good they are. And, you know, you talked about, and we've talked about, the difference in the conferences, and you know, perhaps in the postseason we'll see something different, but I don't feel that there is that much of a difference between the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference this year. I mean, I feel like the Celtics are, you know, one or two in the East, and Cleveland's fallen off, but again, we'll see where they are when the postseason comes around. But I don't feel like, I look at Toronto and Boston side by side with the Warriors and the Rockets, and I still feel like even the Warriors are second in the West, that they're still above everybody else. But I don't feel like they're, and particularly go down the conference as well, I don't feel like there's that disparity that was there, you know, in the past that led to you talking about, you know, the need for, and Adam Silver even looking at it, the commissioner of the NBA, the need to change the postseason to have more equity.
Yeah, there's definitely more parity between the conferences this season, which we've talked about, is kind of a surprise given all the offseason moves.
Exactly.
It looked like, you know, for the last however many years, the West has been way better than the East. Like, it's not even close. And then with all the movement in the offseason, it looked like it was going to get even worse. And, you know, you had GMs and owners of these Western Conference teams saying, you know, if we were in the East, we'd be a top four team. Can't even make the playoffs in the West. But for whatever reason, that's not been the case. The East has come on strong, definitely gotten a lot better, improved from last year. And I think that's a really good thing, because I haven't played for the Spurs for 10 years. There was a ton of times where you look at that Eastern Conference and you're like, this is completely unfair.
This is the Life of Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I'm Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire. Matt is in San Antonio, and we We referenced the Spurs, and the Spurs have fallen to the sixth spot in the Western Conference, and that is much further down than we're used to seeing San Antonio. The good news for the Spurs, who've lost 8 out of 10, is that Kawhi Leonard is working out with the team again, apparently. It looked like he was going to perhaps miss the remainder of the season. He was basically, there was no timeline for his return. I'm not sure that's been changed. But you look at the Spurs this year, and one of the big reasons that they have struggled is the road record, 14-19. And also, defensively, it was one of the top, the Spurs were one of the top defensive teams for the majority of the season. Now they've fallen over the last 10 games, obviously where they've lost 8 out of 10, but to below their standards. Do you see the Spurs kind of having hit a wall and being in free fall at this point, or is there going to be, in your view, a resurgence and where things are at for Kawhi?
Well, the biggest reason for the struggles have been, and take Kawhi out of the picture, is injuries.
Yeah.
Every night, in addition to Kawhi, there's been one or two important rotation guys with some random fluky thing, a sprained knee, a sprained ankle, a pulled muscle, you know, food poisoning. It just seems like one thing after another. And when you take Kawhi out of the lineup, you need everybody. You need Pau Gasol. You need Danny Green. You need Tony Parker. You need these guys healthy every night to kind of overcome not having your best player, you know, quite frankly, a top three player in the entire league and the best defender. And they've just had a streak of bad luck that I've never seen before in all my time here with the Spurs. That being said, you're absolutely right about the defense. Coach Pop, when I played, was always believed in the defense should be constant. It shouldn't matter. You know, injuries should affect offense way more than defense, but for some reason, especially in the month of February, and even more since All-Star break, it's been the opposite. Like, despite all the injuries, the Spurs are scoring like 110 points a game, which is a ton for them. Yet their record is like you said, 2-8 in the last 10 games.
Yeah.
They're 1-3 since All-Star break, and all three of their losses, they scored, you know, over 114 points and lost. And that's just totally uncharacteristic for the San Antonio Spurs.
And you look at the West now, Portland's climbed up to the number three spot. They're on a six-game winning streak. New Orleans has climbed up to the fifth spot. They've won seven in a row. Oklahoma City has never quite taken off this year. They started really bad. They played better for a while, evened off a bit, and they have, you know, never really, as I mentioned, taken off this year. They're in the seventh spot. Denver has been one of the more fun teams to watch this year. I mean, Denver and Minnesota in the West have been great stories. And you look in the Eastern Conference, and obviously, you know, Philadelphia and Brett Brown, I mean, he's so easy to root for. You're not the biggest Joel Embiid fan, as you've noted before, but I still like him, and I like what the Sixers are doing there. But probably, you know, the most surprising story in the league this year, you could say Denver, but is the Indiana Pacers at 35-27. They're at fifth in the East right now. That would probably be the most surprising team this year.
Yeah, and really under the radar. I had no idea they were having a surprisingly good year, so you just said that. I'm in the Western Conference bubble, I guess. But also, when you look at the Western Conference, there are 3 through 7 is separated by one game, and then 8, 9, and 10 are separated by like another game. And all those teams, it seems like, with the exception of the Spurs, are red hot right now. Just playing great. Utah had an 11-game win streak. You look at the last 10 record. I love looking at last 10 in the standings. It's like you go right down the line in the Western Conference, and it's like 8-2, 7-3, 7-3, 8-2. And the only team that seems to be floundering right now is the Spurs.
Yeah.
And yet, despite that,
they're still there. Yeah.
One game out of being the three seed.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a crazy home stretch of the season in this Western Conference.
This is The Life of Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. We'll get to the middle segment of the program here, do some Bruins, do some Celtics, and we'll come back with Matt after this. Welcome back. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. This segment of the show brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you're going to make is who your lawyer is going to be. We encourage you to check out Douglas Leonard and Garvey at nhlawoffice.com. Boston Celtics road trip continues. They are on the road this week and played Saturday night, one of the marquee matchups of the year, against the Houston Rockets. A game the Celtics were in throughout. They ended up losing 123-120. They couldn't make plays late, whether it was giving up rebounds, turning the ball over, not hitting shots. Houston won their 15th straight with that victory over the Celtics and have an NBA best record, 49-13, as we speak here on Monday. Marcus Morris with 21 points for the Celtics in that contest. Here's Kyrie Irving on the mistakes that cost them down the stretch.
But just those plays of just those long rebounds of them just getting them right back, and you know, it kept them in the game.
A lot of Celtics fans are hoping against hope that Gordon Hayward returns this year, plays a couple minutes off the bench down the stretch and into the postseason. But Brad Stevens has continually put out those flames.
But he's super long way away from it, even being in a 1-on-0 workout where he's cutting.
Hayward's injury has allowed for Jason Tatum to get baptism by fire during the course of this year, and he's responded pretty well throughout the course of the season. He had his 20th birthday on Saturday, and prior to the Celtics leaving for Houston, I talked with him at Celtics practice.
Just what have you seen that's impressed you the most about the team coming out of the All-Star break in totality as a group?
We all just seem fresh, and everybody is healthy right now. We all clicking on the same page.
When you look at this group, particularly on the defensive side of things, how does your skill set add to what this team does, particularly from the team defense perspective, where it seems like you get into lanes well, you get on loose balls, and there's a lot of intangibles that you bring?
It has a lot to do with effort, and then just being 6'8", 6'9", being able to guard multiple positions.
When you look at your progression as a player, it seems like more things have been added for you as the year has gone along. What have you seen from yourself in kind of facing the challenges of the schedule as it is?
Just trying to rest, take care of my body as much as I can. It's a long season. We got a long way to go, so I'm just trying to stay up to par.
Your ball handling skills are one of the best attributes that it seems like you have. What advantages do you think that gives you in terms of being able to get to the basket and get that extra step?
That's a big part of being able to score the ball. If you can handle it, especially being as tall as I am, I think that gives me an advantage.
Do you feel like at times you get the calls that you deserve, and do you feel that at times that a rookie has to earn those calls? It seems like a lot of times you get to the basket and you just don't get the contact, but the call isn't there for you.
Some days I get lucky.
And when you look at the impact that Kyrie has had, particularly after the All-Star break, what is it like for you guys when you see that he is in attack mode and he is going to go out and hit the basket?
Well, that's pretty special, just the type of player he is, and when he's locked in, he's very, very hard to stop.
How about the collective basketball IQ of this group? And everybody here seems to be smart. They love the game. They're engaged. How much does it help you to have guys who you have commonality with in regards to thinking and watching and always being around the game?
That's has a lot to do with our success. Guys, we all think the game. We're all on the same page. That has a lot to do with us winning.
Jason Tatum right there. I don't see the Houston game as a setback really at all for the Celtics. I mean, you go against a team that's won 15 straight games on their home court, and you lose and have a chance to win at the end, and that doesn't seem like a big issue for me. Also talked with Al Horford about this team coming out of the break.
I think the coach has been really harping on us being better on the offensive end. He wants us to play with more pace. He's been demanding it from us for the past month, and we've been making some strides. I feel like the past couple of games we've been better. But I just think that's a coach really, honing in on the offensive stuff. I feel like the first part of the year was all the focus was on defense, mm-hmm. and we did great, but we had some slip-ups in the offensive side. So I think that he's just, I think that now we're starting to put both of them together.
It seems like the defense has improved a lot here since after the All-Star break as well. Have you noticed anything different there? Are there any telltale signs that jump out to you with the way that you've been competing defensively?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, after the break, everybody has kind of, it's almost like a fresh start. And, you know, guys are, you know, we really understand that it's getting to that time of year where it's crunch time and we don't have much time to have setbacks. So we want to do the best that we can. And I just think that the whole group is really, you know, committed to playing the right way on the defensive end.
There's been debate about what the top seed means. Do you feel this team has to have the top seed?
I've said it before. I think that for us, it's just making sure that we're playing well once the we're going into the playoffs. Once we're in there, you know, we just do what we do. But I just think that we can't get caught up so much in the seeding. But I just, you know, I want our group playing at the best that we can and going in with some momentum.
Collectively, is there more of a basketball IQ or intellectual curiosity with this group than other teams you've been on? How does, you know, kind of that stuff translate on the court?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think that, you know, every team is different. We have a younger group, but our group is they've learned quickly. I mean, there's still a lot of things that, you know, that we're trying to figure out as a group. But this is about as good a group as I've been around as far as, you know, making adjustments and improving throughout the year.
So Jalen's felt felt compelled to speak out politically, you know, as well. Do you feel that players now are more free to speak their mind politically than your generation?
I think so. I think, you know, there's a lot of issues that have resurfaced, and he feels comfortable enough to do that, and that's, you know, that's great.
Jalen Brown speaking at Harvard last Thursday and talking about that there with Al Horford. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. We'll get to Frank Kaminsky if we have time a little later in the segment. Want to transition to the Bruins, who continue to play good hockey. This past weekend, beating the Montreal Canadiens inside TD Garden 2-1 in a game in which they trailed with 2:45 to go in the game, had not scored. They were down 1-0. That's when they scored in the power play. They had a ton of chances during the course of the game. Then Brad Marchand putting on a clinic of the 3-on-3 in overtime for the Bruins to win it 2-1. They swept the Canadiens this year, won all four games. One of the big keys for Marchand is how difficult he is to knock off the puck despite his relatively diminutive size. He's great on the puck. He moves from side to side. Great skating ability and strength down low. And that was exhibited on the game-winning tally.
It was always kind of a staple for me, just because I never had the best hands, so I was always just trying to keep it away from people. But when you're, I guess that's the biggest thing, 3-on-3, it's all about puck possession and holding on to it. Normally when you try to go through guys, and that's when you can kind of break things down, but you're just trying to keep it away from everyone and find a hole. And you see when you start going through guys 3-on-3, and that's when you can cause yourself a game, so tough to do that.
It seemed like that was kind of what led to the last goal. Like, you were strong on the puck, and then you were able to play with your own speed. How much did that play a role, obviously, there?
Yeah, I think a few things played into it. The line before us made a great change, which allowed us to get in the zone and have some zone time with some tired guys on the ice. We just started moving around a bit, and that played a huge role. We possessed it there for a while, and they were tired, and we were able to make some plays.
Jake DeBrusque scored the game-tying goal for the Bruins with 2:45 remaining in the regular session.
What's the mindset like in that spot where you've created so many chances, so many power plays, and you need that one goal to tie it?
Yeah, well, it's a unique situation because, but that's part of the game. That's part of hockey. I think it's just hard. I think it's just, one-goal games. I think when there's when you're pushing, it's easy to, back away and get frustrated. And I thought we did get frustrated, but at the same time, I still think we played our game and got rewarded late in the game, obviously, on a power play and off a good forecheck. It was a good forecheck, and it's one of those things that the game kind of gives you what you deserve at certain times, and I think that we just made a good play and we connected on it, and it was nice, but at the same time, I thought our overall game, we had good chances. Give credit to their goaltender and their defense. They were doing a good job boxing out. Like we were talking about earlier, our defensemen were shooting lots of pucks, and they were really focused on Keeping us out of there for the second chances, and seemed like Niemi was up for the task, so it was nice to get one by him and then obviously win.
How's Nash changed the dynamic for you and Krejci?
Yeah, I think it changed it completely. I mean, just looking at him, he's about 6'4 on the ice, and he can fly, and, he's a scorer. And it's one of those things where, probably as an opposing team, it's a pretty big threat. And I think it's just having him on our line gives us lots of space. And I personally like the way he plays down low. I know that I can give him the puck down low, and he'll do something with it pretty much guaranteed. And he's a really special player, and very privileged that I'm on his line. And like I was saying earlier, I just want to do anything I can to stay there. And obviously things aren't going to be perfect. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be lots of things thrown at us. But in the time that I have with them, I want to learn as much and contribute.
Jake DeBrusk right there, and an injury to Charlie McAvoy early in the game is going to bring the Bruins' depth, which they acquired during the course of this this trade deadline process, right to the test, as did the injury to Patrice Bergeron. Here is Torrey Krug.
It's turning out to be a great thing. I mean, there's a lot of unknown factors when you do something like that, but we brought in a lot of great people, and they're all leaders in their own right in their respective rooms, and they come from winning organizations. So it's been huge for us, and down the road, especially with how many games we're playing in March, it's going to be even more important.
What's the process been like of integrating those guys into what you do? You mentioned they're all a lot of leaders, a lot of different personalities, good personalities, but still, is there a process of kind of making everything work still?
Yeah, I think time's the number one thing. Also, they're just veteran guys will eventually find their ways, and I think time and chemistry with their line mates, and obviously where they fit, just embrace them inside the locker room with open arms, and let their personalities slowly creep out, and they'll become part of this team. So they've done a great job for us. They've kept us in some games that maybe we haven't deserved to be in, and they'll continue to do that.
What does it say about the team that you're winning so many different ways? Scoring goals, obviously, in the other game, this one, you don't score for a while, but you find a way.
Yeah, it's we want that to be a characteristic of this team. We want to be able to win different ways, tight defensive contests, and some nights if we don't have the defensive structure that we want, then we're going to be able to score goals and win that way too, and eventually lock it down for us. So it's definitely a big part of this team.
David Pastrnak was struggling to score and even create scoring chances prior to Thursday's game against the Pittsburgh Penguins, and talked with him about that as well as the acquisitions.
So what's the adjustment been like having all these new guys come into the locker room? Is there kind of a chemistry process of trying to figure each other out?
100%. It's going to take time. And we got three, four guys new, It's going to take time, but they're great players, and they're going to be a huge help for our team. So it's going to take time, though, but, hopefully every game we get better and better.
With Bergeron going down, it obviously helps to have the extra bodies as well. It seems like it's a good time for, obviously, those guys to come in.
Yeah, exactly. They played really well last game, and get a big goals for us. So, how I said, they're great players, and obviously we miss Bergie, and it's time for us to step up,
For you, what are you seeing from your game right now in terms of creating scoring opportunities, getting on the board?
Every game is different. Some game you feel good, some game you don't feel it. So for me, it's just try to get the opportunities for me or for my line mates in the game, and obviously my offensive game is strongest, so I need to make some plays.
As an elite player, do you feel like there's more of a focus on you, this year than perhaps in previous years, drawing the top D pair and getting played harder?
Not really. Even last year, we already played the whole season against the best D pair, because I played with Bergie. So it's similar, Obviously, every year, guys getting better, and so as we, it's. I don't see any difference. It can go in every night. So just try to work every day.
David Pastrnak right there. With injury comes opportunity, and Adam McQuaid, a longtime Bruins stalwart defenseman, has been knocked out of the lineup by the trades that the Bruins made, but now with McAvoy out, he looks to be back in.
When you look at the deadline acquisitions for this team, what effect do you see it having in a positive fashion, moving forward, the added depth and the added guys to the roster, and it could perhaps, create some issues here in terms of chemistry?
I think it's obviously added a lot of different elements, I think. I think we've gotten harder to play against with some bigger bodies and veteran guys that have a lot of experience in the league. So a couple of guys that were captains on previous teams, and Tommy Wingles is from experience playing against him. I mean, he's not very fun to play against. He works hard. He's tenacious, and even last game, obviously he chipped in with the offense, which he's capable of as well. So. We'll see Holdy tonight. I think every guy's been a great addition to the team, and it's probably reiterating what everyone's been saying, that if you're going to have a long run like we hope to do, you're going to be tested in different ways and probably have different guys, have to step up at different times. So. Having more guys, the better.
Was it surprising the volume of players, and particularly the veteran players that came in, given kind of the way that this core was set up, and also the success that you guys have had?
I personally wasn't really sure what to expect, but when you see those moves, obviously the people that are responsible for the moves see positive things in this group and want to add to it and try and give us the best chance to have that success. So, I don't think you can have too much experience or leadership and not that the young guys, obviously they've come in and done a tremendous job and been a huge part of the success we've had this year. And that's not going to change. We're still going to need the young guys to continue to play the way I have and we then also have some new additions and some more veteran presence helps as well.
Does it feel like in some ways it's kind of been a restart in that, there was the roster before, now the roster now, and kind of figuring out the chemistry, where guys are going to fit in, what the role is going to be moving forward?
There's probably a little bit of that just in the fact that guys haven't played with guys before, so you're going to, obviously hopefully you build that chemistry pretty quick. There's obviously going to be a little bit of an adjustment period, but you work through it. And again, I think in the long run, it'll be helpful to the group.
Adam McQuaid right there. We transition back to basketball, where one of my favorite guys to watch in college hoops over the last number of years has been Frank Kaminsky with Wisconsin. He's trying to figure out his role, his niche in the NBA. He's had his best year as a pro this season. He came in with the Charlotte Hornets to take on the Celtics. I talked with Frank the Tank.
What have been the biggest keys to your development over the last 3 years? It seems like you're playing at the highest level you have in your career. What's led to that?
I think confidence is the biggest thing. Obviously, everybody on our team, you can just tell from the guys from the top, everyone works. Everyone puts in a lot of time to get better. I think it's just all about going out there and doing it confidently.
Each player, when they come into the league, kind of has a vision for how things are going to go, what they're going to be able to do, and the success they're going to be able to have. What type of a wake-up call, so to speak, does any player pretty much get when they come into the league, regardless of pedigree or expectations?
I think the 82-game schedule really kicks you right in the face, from the get-go. It's a long season. It's a grind, both physically and mentally. Not everybody can be perfect every single game. It's just about realizing that, if you have a bad game, you got to let that one go and come back with a fresh mindset for the next one.
And you look at Jason Tatum on the other side, and thinking about him specifically, where he gets off to a great start, fundamentally sound, comes into the league with expectations, and then there's going to be lulls. What does it take mentally to be able to survive that season and kind of deal with those downs when the shot isn't falling, when you miss a coverage or whatever?
For me, especially in games, it's always tough. I'm kind of a guy that always just gets on myself for the smallest things, and I let it affect me. It's just all about forgetting those plays. You're a professional. You're here for a reason, and you do have talent, and you do have the potential to go out there and make the right play every single time. But when you have those bad games and those lulls where it feels like it's going from game to game, it's always nice to just take a step back away from the game and really refresh your mind and try to come out with a fresh mindset for a different game and just forget about everything that was going wrong before.
Do you have to kind of find a niche for yourself, or does the team do that in terms of this is something that I do well and this is something I can do continuously in order to help the team?
you know, there's obviously things you can do and things you're good at. And, you know, the coaches definitely help you with all that stuff. You know, they have to play the strengths of their players. But, you know, in the NBA, it's a lot more individualized. You got to find out what works for you. You know, whether it's getting more into your routine, you know, maybe taking a step back, letting your body rest a little bit. You know, everybody's different in the ways that they need to take care of their game.
Father, I want to ask you about the hierarchy of the Eastern Conference right now and seeing, you know, the Celtics, the Cavs, the Raptors. Is there a favorite at this point in your view, and what do you like about what the Celtics do?
No, I don't think there's a clear-cut favorite at this point. You know, there's still a lot of season left. Anything can happen. You know, there are some really good teams that are playing at a high level and have been this whole season. You know, the Celtics are one of those teams. Obviously been at the top for however long now. You know, that's a team that's going to be a tough out once they get to the playoffs, and a team that's going to be tough for us to beat tonight.
And watch what you guys have been doing. You've been playing really good defense over the stretch you've been winning. Is just when you watch the Celtics and the effort, how they get into the ball, how they play with pace, is that kind of a marker for what, you know, obviously any team in the league can do? If they do it consistently, can it be successful?
You know, obviously they have the players with the kind of mindset. You know, everything goes with personnel and what, you know, what your players are capable of doing. And obviously the Celtics have players that are capable of pressuring the ball consistently for, you know, the whole time they're out there on the court, and that obviously makes it more difficult for us as well as many other teams in this league. But you know, just their mindset, you know, their defensive mindsets is something you can take note of.
That is Charlotte Hornets forward and former Wisconsin big man Frank Kaminsky here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show presented by Douglas Leonard and Garvey and NHLawOffice.com. And we return more with Matt. Again, you're listening to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Tune in next week as I'll be down at spring training with the Red Sox. We'll hear from the Red Sox as they get set for the 2018
Welcome
baseball
back. This
season.
Is The
Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I'm Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire. This segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. When you look at the Celtics right now, where do you project them? We talked about this last week. You know, are they the best team in the Eastern Conference? And you know, they could be, but we still need to see more. And I think that, you know, going into the season, the conventional wisdom was that if the Celtics play the Golden State Warriors, or not going into the season, but particularly after the Gordon Hayward injury, that if they were able to find their way to the finals, that it was essentially going to be a bloodbath. I don't feel that way anymore. Like, I still think the Golden State Warriors would beat the Celtics, but I feel like there's progress that's been made, where last year, obviously, the Celtics were, you know, completely eviscerated in the Eastern Conference Finals. There was a feeling of excitement and I think not necessarily amongst the team, but you know, amongst fans and media, that they won that game 7 against the Wizards, and there they were in the Eastern Conference Finals, and everything else was gravy. And that was the feeling until we actually watched that series, and you're like, wow, this is absolutely terrible. But maybe it was better not even coming here. But so the Celtics, to me, you know, this year was kind of about proving that they are a championship, you know, caliber team. And then, you know, the next year is the last year of Kyrie's deal, and then seeing where with a player option, then kind of seeing where things go from there. But to me, this season has been about them proving that they can win a championship, and seeing, you know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Terry Rozier develop into not something beyond role players, kind of like that hybrid in between a star and a role player, a consistent contributor, a starter, a player who can be impactful on a championship team and continue that trajectory. And to me, you know, to this point, the Celtics season has been a success in that sense.
I agree. Those guys have made huge strides all season long, especially in their consistency. And the big test, obviously, is going to be, does that carry over
into
the playoffs? And if it does, and they get that production out of that bench unit, I agree with you. They're going to be really tough to beat. They're well-coached, not just offensively with execution, but on defense as well. They can put a lot of different lineups and looks out there to match up where need be with the opposing team. And who knows what will happen this year. This year, I think for the first time, because LeBron has just dominated the Eastern Conference for so many years, but this year, I think it's totally up for grabs.
Yeah, I agree.
You look at how the Cavs have struggled, and even since the trade, they looked amazing that first game after the trade, but even since then, it's kind of been the same old story with the Cavs. Inconsistent, not good defense. I think this is the year where someone else could easily emerge from the Eastern Conference. And if the Celtics can maintain what they've done all regular season into the playoffs, it could very well be them, for sure.
And that could also send LeBron on his way somewhere else, too. If LeBron is beaten in the postseason this year, you wonder if he's going to, you know, stay in Cleveland, or is he going to look to another scenario that, you know, presents a easier path to another championship or two for him. So it's kind of twofold, where you could end the Cavs era. If the Cavs, you know, end up getting to the finals again, and you see the young pieces and you look at, oh, well, maybe if we just add, you know, this or that. And still, I mean, Love has to come back. And I'm not going to write the Cavaliers off as of yet, but I do feel that...
And we've seen they can hit the switch, too.
Right. But it's a different team, and it feels like they're more, you know, vulnerable this year. Like, we talked about last year about them coming into the playoffs, but... A, you know, you still saw the talent level, you knew what they had, and you knew they could flip the switch and turn it on, and there was really no other team out there that was going to beat them. I mean, I didn't think the Celtics...
Well, that's the thing. Boston's obviously much better this year, adding Kyrie Irving and Tatum, and their younger guys developing. And then Toronto, to me, is much better just by embracing a new style of play and ball movement and pace. So, you know, to me, the story isn't about the Cavs. It's about Toronto.
Right.
It's about Boston taking that next step and being a better team and thus being a legitimate threat for the Cavaliers' dominance.
Right. And, I mean, you look even the first round for the Cavaliers, and, I mean, they're 7 games behind the Celtics right now. They're not getting anywhere close to the Celtics. Celtics are either going to be the 1 or the 2 seed. They're in that 3 spot or down. So... They're only a half game ahead of Washington. They're a game ahead of Indiana. They're a game and a half ahead of the Philadelphia 76ers. So I don't – the matchup right now
is – Those are scary teams. No one wants to see the
right,
Sixers.
Right, right. But that's who they'd play right now in the first round. They'd play the Sixers in the first round. And I'm not guaranteeing that the Cavs beat the Sixers. I'm not guaranteeing they beat the Milwaukee Bucks. I might guarantee that, but the potential exists for Milwaukee to win that series. Philadelphia against the Cavs, that might be an upset.
It could be. Philadelphia is really hot right now. They have a tremendous amount of talent, and all those young guys keep getting better. Obviously, it'll be their first time dabbling in the playoffs in a really long time, so I'm curious how they respond to that. However, it's still a team that can get really hot. We've seen what Embiid can do. They get J.J. Redick back healthy, going 100% as well. It opens things up in the middle. And that's going to be a tough arena to win in the playoffs. We know how Philly sports fans are.
No doubt. All right, so as we head to spring training here, Red Sox and Yankees look to be back to their peak of 2003 through 2005, when those two teams were going at it. Every game meant so much, and it's great for baseball. It's exciting. There's this conventional wisdom that's out there that the Yankees are better than the Red Sox, and you know they went to the ALCS. They added Giancarlo Stanton. They now have arguably the two best home run hitters in baseball on the same team, but I'm not buying it. During the course of an entire regular season, the Red Sox are going to throw a guy out there every 5 days and give him a chance to win. Their offense is really good. They're really good defensively, and I think overall they are better than the Yankees. So are you buying into the hype that the Red Sox are coming into this season as the underdog in the division, or are you feeling the Red Sox are getting slighted?
Well, I always think the Red Sox are better than the Yankees, no matter what. however, taking the emotional attachment out of it, it does seem like they're in it to win it this year, and I am very excited to see the Red Sox back on the map, because I, you know, as the most proud Red Sox fans out there who either travel outside of New England or maybe don't live in New England anymore, everybody else in the rest of the league when the Red Sox are struggling love to rub it in. So it'll be nice to get some revenge this season, hopefully.
Matt, as always, appreciate joining us for the program. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. It's The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center.